Cough button.
Yeah. I didn't even use that. Even when we were on the radio. I never used the
cough. I'm not sure it worked.
What's up? This is Movies on Up. Cocoon have aliens. I'm Dave, joined by my co-host, Mr. Ryan.
I have movies.
And we are Movies on Up. Our tagline for this week, Cocoon have aliens. I don't know if it's a typo, but it's directly from IMDb, so we went with it. If you know what movie that's from, hint,
I have an
idea. In the title, or it's in the tagline. If you know what movie that's from, hit us
aliens.
Up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or the Twitter, @moviesonup. If you're right and we pick you, we will hatch a Movies on Up prize package delivered directly to you. You have prize package. Oh, that makes sense. Winner have prize package. This week, Solo, a Star Wars story, flies into theaters, directed now by Ron Howard. So we thought, hey, that's a good one we haven't done. I think there's some good Ron Howard movies that we haven't really mentioned. So we're doing our favorite Ron Howard movies. When I put it, it was just, hey, let's do our favorite Ron Howard movies. Didn't really make any rules. We both went directing, which I feel was interesting. Like, you know he's a director, but yeah. I think there's a lot of Ron Howard movies that you don't realize are Ron Howard movies.
It is odd. For a guy that's directed some really big movies, he's not necessarily an above the title Ron Howard presents, whatever, in the way a Spielberg would be or a Tarantino or some of those guys. Even when he was brought on to direct Solo, I remember being like, all right, hey, cool. Like, Ron Howard, that's a legit director, and he is. And Sarah's like, well, what has he directed? What have I seen of Ron Howard's? But here's the thing. Even if you don't know if you've seen a Ron Howard movie,
you have. Yeah.
He just makes good movies. We say this all the time. It's a big compliment for directors. He does not get in the way of a good movie. He doesn't make it a Ron Howard joint.
Exactly. And this is going to feel blasphemous, but I feel like his career, I don't want to compare them, but I don't want to make it sound like an insult to Ron Howard. I feel like he's second-rate Spielberg. They're very similar in the way that they don't really make bad movies. They make solid movies. And the only style is that the movies are really good.
It's commercial, appeals to a lot of people.
Yeah, he is like a few tiers down, but I feel very similar to Spielberg in the way that if he makes a movie, it's going to be good. Even the Inferno books, like mm-hmm. the movies.
Dan Brown.
Yeah, I was thinking the character.
Robert Ludlum.
Langford. Something like that. But, like,
books on up.
Even those, they're not for me, but they're intriguing enough. I only watched the first one, and it was okay. Like, the Da Vinci Code, it was good. I could see the appeal to it. And that's the thing with his movies, is even the ones I don't like, I can understand why somebody would love Far and Away. I can understand why somebody would like these movies that he does. But yet, I think there's only a handful that people catch and think, oh, that's a Ron Howard movie. So I think we'll talk about
it. They'll probably be on the list.
Yeah, and I think we'll talk about a lot where, as you're listening, you'll think like, oh, I didn't realize that was a Ron Howard movie. Because I think there's a lot of those. So enough about how we got there. Ryan, your number five favorite Ron Howard movie.
My number five is a movie that I don't like racing, but I can see, after watching this movie, I could see how people would be into this. It is Rush from 2013, starring Thor, Danielle Brühl, and Olivia Wilde. I mean, I don't like racing of any sort, be it real or artificial. You're unlikely to ever find a racing movie on any list of mine because I rarely watch them. Outside of Talladega Nights, I can't really think what made me decide to give this a try, but I was honestly glad I did. I thought Howard did a great job of taking a story about relationships, like the relationship between James Hunt and Niki Lauda, and each driver's individual relationship with the sport, why they were in it, what made them stay in it, and made those stories the center of a sports movie or a racing movie, whatever you want to call it. It just so happens to be racing, but you could see those kind of relationships play out across any given sport, how the two best in one season, what their relationship is with what's like Magic and Bird, or even if it's two boxers or whatever, the interplay between two people both vying to be the best and what drives each of them is kind of universal. but it's told through racing, at least in this movie. And I do think that the racing's filmed really well. It adds a level of intrigue because we've already bought into the characters, but I personally didn't really know how the races end up. It's not a story I'm super familiar with, so till the end, I legit did not know who would win. I think Hemsworth really does a great job of nailing the Playboy driver, while Brule was amazing playing basically the polar opposite character. And I think we feel like we're supposed to side with Hemsworth and Hunt at the beginning of the movie, but the way Brule plays Lauda and the way Howard shows us his story, I think that by the end of the movie, you see a more complete picture of each guy, and you can kind of find yourself rooting for each. There's really no bad guys.
Brule has the knack for that. Even Civil War, yeah. Like, I could see where Baron Zemo's coming from. Like, it's not, his methods may be off, but his intention I get. And my number five, from a little further back than Ryan's number five, from 1985, it is Cocoon, starring...
Cocoon have aliens.
Don Ameche, Wilford Brimley, Hugh Cronin, Brian Dennehy, Steve Guttenberg, Jessica Tandy, a bunch of old people. Baird Oliver, he was very young at the time, but a bunch of old people. Cocoon have aliens. The aliens have people in these cocoons, and then they store them in a swimming pool that these old people sneak into and swim in and get these essentially powers, this youthful energy. It's one of those, I'm not going to say I've watched Cocoon recently. I've mentioned my Aunt Laura a lot on this podcast. She loved this movie and what was the Cocoon, the Second Coming or the Second Cocoon or whatever it was called. Cocoon the Return, I think.
Cocoon 2, make them cocoons fuck.
Cocoon 2, have more aliens. She loved this movie, so I had to watch it a lot when I was a kid. And I remember there's some good laughs in it. It's just a joyous movie. Like, it's joyful. It have enough alien to keep me into it. Like, there was enough sci-fi element to keep my interest. So, I mean, I'm not going to say that I could sit down and watch Cocoon right now and love it. But it's one of those that I have memories attached to this movie that I almost don't want to ruin them by rewatching. I forgot it was a Ron Howard movie. I don't know that I ever realized that it was a Ron Howard movie until we're doing this list. And once I realized, like, oh, he did Cocoon, Cocoon's just one of those that's always going to hold a special place in my heart. So I had to have it on this list.
Cocoon reminds me of a Twilight Zone episode called Kick the Can, where a bunch of old folks, they're in like a nursing home and they sneak out at night to go play Kick the Can. And when they do, they literally transform into their younger selves. And I think they did that story in the Twilight Zone movie. It's one of the more well-known stories, but that just kind of reminds me of Cocoon. And I think Ron Howard does a great job of getting that youth and fun in Cocoon as well. And my number four, not necessarily, it's not a fun movie. I'll just go ahead and put it out there. But I think at the time it was a really interesting movie for its star, Mel Gibson, who stars opposite Gary Sinise and Rene Russo in 1996's Ransom. At the time, if you kidnap Mel Gibson's son in a movie, you can probably be pretty sure that he's going to blast his way through dozens of henchmen on his way to single-handedly rescuing the child. Gibson had been a giant action star for a good 15 years before Ransom, and to me, it looked like we would get more of what we had come to expect from Mad Max in this movie. But that's not really how it plays out. He's armed with more money than guns. He uses that cash to turn the ransom for his kid into a bounty for the scumbag that kidnapped him. It's more of a cerebral approach than we had seen from Riggs to this point in his career. And Gary Sinise's crooked cop was a great foil for that, a great cat for the cat and mouse game that these two would play. I give Gibson a lot of credit coming off Braveheart the year before to do a more suspense, less action hero movie. And he proved that he could handle that job. And I think Ransom was very successful because of it.
Yeah, and this is another one that I think you ask the average person. People know Ransom. Give me back my son.
Yeah, it's a Mel Gibson
movie. You know that Mel Gibson movie. Ask anybody on the street who directed it. I think 9.5 out of 10 of them aren't going to say Ron Howard. We've talked about directors before where Steven Soderbergh, you could feel a Soderbergh movie, but there's not a type of Soderbergh movie. He does so many different things. I think Ron Howard is that same way. His movies cover all sorts of, like, Ransom is close to an action movie, which he has others that are similar, but there's not a distinct Ron Howard movie. My number four is a little bit older. Also from 1989, directed by Ron Howard, starring Steve Martin, Mary Steenburgen, Diane Wiest, Jason Robards, Rick Moranis, Keanu Reeves, Martha Plimpton, Joaquin Phoenix. It's Parenthood. It's just a ton of stories all put together. It's paced incredibly well. It's all people from this one family, and there's a lot going on in this movie. There are a lot of characters, a lot of subplots, a lot of story going on in here, and none of it feels kind of rushed. Everybody gets their chance and their moment, and it all comes together, and it does feel like family. It feels like you're part of this family for the running time of it. And, you know, Steve Martin's great. I like movie star Steve Martin. I'm a big Steve Martin movie star fan, so I like him leading stuff like this. Another one that I didn't really realize, I don't think of as a Ron Howard movie, but anytime Parenthood comes up, yeah, I love that movie. I think it's funny. The vibrator when the power goes out. There's a lot about this movie that I love and that I have great memories of, but I don't remember it as a Ron Howard movie.
My number three is a movie that wouldn't necessarily be considered. I mean, at the time, it probably was a Ron Howard movie, only because I think it was novel that Opie was directing movies, or Richie Cunningham at this point was directing movies in 1982. When he directed his Happy Days co-star Henry Winkler in Night Shift, also with Michael Keaton and Shelley Long. Simply put, this movie makes the list for giving us Michael Keaton the movie star. As with Winkler, he had done a bunch of TV shows in the 70s and looked like he may remain on TV until he partnered with the Fonz to run a prostitution ring out of a morgue. It also gave us Ron Howard, the director. I'm pretty sure he was only about 20 when this movie came out. And as a movie, I think it's a bit uneven. A lot of the funny parts come in the first half, but the performances, specifically by Keaton, really, really stand out. He nailed screwball comedy, and it's not a surprise that he broke out, had Mr. Mom, Johnny Dangerously in 83 and 84, before becoming one of the biggest stars in the world by the late 80s.
Night Shift was one of my also-rans. It kicks off a four-year span where Night Shift, one of my also-rans, one of my top five, one of what might be in your top five, which is one of his most popular movies. I mean, it's continues. Not. You just keep going. There's no stop with the hits. This was on my also-ran because of Michael Keaton. He also did Gung Ho a few years later, which I had as an also-ran, just because if you direct Michael Keaton in a movie and I'm doing a list, it's going to be on there. My number three, a little bit later in Ron Howard, like a lot of my stuff's earlier, from 2003, I feel like it's one of the little overlooked movie starring Tommy Lee Jones and Cate Blanchett and Evan Rachel Wood, Aaron Eckhart, Val Kilmer. The Missing takes place in 1895. Cate Blanchett's daughter goes missing, and she tries to get together with her estranged father to help find him. Similar to Ransom, just in the Wild West-ish, like in 1895. It's really, really compelling. It's badass Tommy Lee Jones. It's Cate Blanchett, who just rules in everything. Aaron Eckhart and Val Kilmer, obviously, are just awesome. It's one of those, like Ransom, where it could very easily be an action movie. It could use Tommy Lee Jones as this action star, but it doesn't. It's more subdued. It's more of a thriller, almost. It's more of a hunt movie than a revenge movie. It's really, really good, and I think criminally underrated.
My number two is a movie that I've talked about a couple times on this podcast, and it really shouldn't surprise anyone that, of course, if I'm doing a list about Ron Howard or any given director, and they direct a boxing movie, it's probably going to be on here, and it's Cinderella Man from 2005, starring Russell Crowe, Renee Zellweger, and Paul Giamatti. Like I said, I've mentioned multiple times how much I like this movie, and while I said earlier that I don't particularly care for racing movies, I like boxing movies, so I was going to watch this regardless. And I think that this is right in the Howard wheelhouse. You've got an underdog story based on a real underdog. J.J. Braddock was certainly that, and Russell Crowe was really good in the movie. To be honest, this has absolutely nothing to do with the movie, but I appreciate the fact that John Oliver bought the jockstrap from this movie for, I think, like $7,000. And then donated it to the last Blockbuster store in existence. There's so much about that. I didn't realize there was a Blockbuster still in existence. It is. It's in Alaska. It has a $7,000 jockstrap worn by Russell Crowe, who auctioned it off during his divorce auction. I like the movie. I'm not going to go to Alaska and fly across the country to see a $7,000 jockstrap, but I like boxing movies. It's mostly not because of the boxing. It's because of the stories. Ron Howard is a really good storyteller. He tells a really good story that I didn't know anything about, and heretofore I didn't care about until Ron Howard brought it to me.
When I think of Ron Howard as director, there's two movies that I instantly think of. One of them is my obvious, if you've ever heard me talk about movies,
it's your obvious number
you know
one.
What my number one is. My number two, I think, in the history of this podcast, which is 6+ years now, it's probably off in the ratio of how much I like a movie to how little I talk about it. The biggest ratio of that is probably 1991's Backdraft, which is my number two. I love this movie. I absolutely adore this movie and hold this movie in very, very high regard, starring Kurt Russell, Billy Baldwin, De Niro, Donald Sutherland, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Scott Glenn, Rebecca De Mornay, Jason Gedrick, J.T. Walsh. I hold this movie very, very high, and I feel like I barely talked about it on this podcast. I probably have many more times than I remember, but I mention Heat a lot. I think Backdraft is really, really close to Heat as far as crime movies
would
go.
Would you say it's a perfect movie?
Backdraft's close. It's not. I knew that was coming. But I feel like when it comes to crime movies, Backdraft is really, really close to Heat because it is one of those multifaceted. It's not just good guy hunt bad guy. It's good guy hunt bad guy, but you know the bad guy as well. So, like, you get to know them all. And what's really fascinating in this is that on the surface, it just comes off like an action movie about firefighters, but it's way more than that. It is an intense crime Heat type crime drama, but where in this, it's almost a monster movie because the fire itself is a character, and they used so much real fire and in such a distinct way, and it was built into it. It wasn't just like, hey, let's make cool looking fire. It was written in that, like, here's how the fires start and here's what happens, and the fire is a character in this. It's almost like the Freddy Krueger of this movie. It's this scary, scary thing that takes on this life of its own. And in 1991, you hadn't seen fire like this in movies where it's so involved. And in 2018, we haven't seen fire in a movie like this since 1991's Backdraft because it's so cool and how it was shot, the firefighter angle, the investigation angle, like everybody's playing somebody who you don't expect them to. De Niro is kind of in a crime movie. You expect something out of De Niro, but in here he's something different. Billy Baldwin. This is probably my favorite movie featuring any Baldwin. Maybe Usual Suspects is up there. I love Backdraft. And this is one of those that it's weird. There just haven't been a lot of chances to put it on a list. And maybe because it is such a different movie. It is very not action movie, not really. It is a firefighter movie, but it's more than that. It's a fire. Like, there's so much going on here, and I really, really love this movie, and I watch it regularly. For being almost 30 years old by now, it holds up. It's a really, really good movie, which I keep making the Heat comparison. Heat has some parts that are pretty cringeworthy that don't hold up. The scene with the TV, and you're not going to watch my TV. You can sit in my house and you can fuck my wife, but you're not going to watch my TV. And he's carrying this, like, 13-inch, like, big old tube TV. But, like, Backdraft holds up. It looks fascinating. It's a well-directed movie, not just from the visuals, but from the storytelling, from the performances. And that's something we haven't really touched on a lot, is, like, all these movies we're mentioning have great casts that he gets great performances out of them. Like, good actors want to work with directors like Ron Howard because he makes them even better. He let you see something different than what you expect from him. And I think that's one of the most appealing things about working with Ron Howard for these actors is you get something you're not expecting from him, and it's still great.
We're going to get to good casts and good performances with my number one.
Mine too.
Yes, but they're not the same movie. My number one is the movie, when I think of Ron Howard movies, it's the first one that comes to mind. But that's for me. I think that when people think of Apollo 13, they think of a lot of things before they get to Ron Howard. And they maybe think of Tom Hanks, Kevin Bacon, Bill Paxton.
Space.
Gary Sinise, the moon. Or two actors that both got nominated for Best Supporting Actor that year, Ed Harris and Kathleen Quinlan. like I mentioned, if you ask someone what a Quentin Tarantino movie is, I'm pretty sure they'd be able to answer you. Steven Spielberg is another guy that has the ability to make a Spielberg movie, and people know what that is. Ron Howard, while he's a fantastic director, it may be harder to quantify as to what a Ron Howard movie is. But if there is one, or an example of what Ron Howard does best, I think it's Apollo 13. He does a wonderful job of taking what's an incredibly dramatic story, one of an interplanetary scale, and he turns it into something that we can kind of all relate to. I've never been on a spaceship. I probably won't ever be. I don't know any astronauts. But this is just a story about four dudes trying to get home. You know, they could easily have been on a ship in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. They could be, you know, stuck out in the woods just trying to get back to their car. It could be anything. It just so happens to be astronauts in space. And he takes what could be a very complicated story. The things that go wrong on the spacecraft, like, that's all astrophysics. How do you explain that to an audience, a mass audience? All right, well, I got to figure out how to make this square filter fit in the round hole. That's basically what he does throughout the entire movie. He does a masterful job in making sure that we're all able to follow the events and know when we should be worried. It helps when he's able to explain the mountain that's in front of the cast. And like I said, the cast was amazing here. Harrison Quinlan, both nominated for their supporting roles. Tom Hanks, possibly at his Tom Hanksiest. This is a bunch of movie stars. It's an ensemble cast. And when you think of the stars of Apollo 13, I don't think Ed Harris and Kathleen Quinlan are the first two you think of. But that just shows how well he utilized everyone in this movie. The two that were nominated aren't astronauts. It's the mission control guy and Tom Hanks's wife. But I think that's where Ron Howard as a director really, really shines, is his ability to get great performances and tell a great story. At the end of the day, I think that's what directors are. They're storytellers. Ron Howard tells the story. He doesn't need to be part of the story. He's content to just let the story stand on its own.
I feel like this is a Ron Howard movie, to where if you ask the average person, I feel like this is probably one of those. I don't know why, but I mean, he's got a lot of those that really don't feel like Ron Howard movies. My Ron Howard movie is obviously from 1988. Willow. It had been 8 when this came out. I remember going to see it in the theaters. It's one of the most excited I've ever been to go to a theater. It's one of my favorite movie-going experiences 30 years ago. I love this movie. Yeah, some of the effects don't hold up. Kevin Pollak and the brownies.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
They don't look great. But Val Kilmer as Mad Mardigan is one of my favorite movie characters ever. The story is fun. It's great to see Warwick Davis, who's had this amazing career in a million movies. It's great to see him as this lead.
Not have to put on a suit.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Joanne Whaley is great. It's got a great villain, Queen Bev Morda. So is Sorsha. There's really cool characters in Willow, not just Willow. But, I mean, the brownies were fun. They had their moment. Mad Mardigan, I think, is great. All of these characters are really, really good in this world that I think is fascinating. And my joke, my thing is, oh, if he did a solo, young Solo movie, why doesn't he want to go do a young Mad Mardigan movie? And there was an interview where he's talking about, you know, a Willow sequel 30 years later where you're following the baby who's now some 30-year-old. That's not out of the question, and I would be there for that. Like, I would be 100% on board for that. I love this movie, and this movie is so important to me, both because I have fond memories of it from my childhood, but also because I love it now. Like, I still love this movie. And, you know, I think in our 6-year episode, I think this was one that you brought up as one of my 6, like, essential movies for my taste, and it is. I love it so much. And I will always talk about Willow any chance I get.
It's one that I think, you know, with stuff like Lord of the Rings being popular now, I'm surprised more people haven't gone back to watch this. It's been in the news recently, obviously, because Ron Howard has mentioned that he'd like to do a sequel. And there's a character in Solo that takes a lot from Mad Mardigan, or he put a lot of Mad Mardigan into that character, which I think is the perfect movie for a character like that. He's not Aragorn. You know what I mean? He's not your prototypical hero. And Val Kilmer, I think, was
he was Val Kilmer is so, like, he's a punchline now, but his career is awesome. And this is always going to be my favorite Val Kilmer movie. As much as I rave about Heat, this is my favorite Val Kilmer movie.
Yeah, I mean, this was one that I always knew was going to be on your list, and I always knew it was going to be number one, so I left it off. Backdraft, I know how much you like that one. This one, we didn't have any crossover, which I think shows the breadth of the career. Like, we were able to pick 10 movies that we both really like. It's not like I had to throw Rush on there. I like it, and I remember talking about it on the show before.
You know what? I had 5 also-rans. 4 of them were on your list.
Yeah.
Apollo 13, I knew would make your list. Sure. It's good. It's not one of my favorite movies. It's a good movie, though. You can't take that away. I had Ransom, Night Shift, or I guess 3 of them are on there. But I had Gung Ho on there just because Michael Keaton. Yeah. And a movie that I didn't realize was a Ron Howard movie, which probably his most famous movie, Splash. That's a Ron Howard movie. That was right after Night Shift. Like, he had that run from, like, 82.
Could have been another Ron Howard, Michael Keaton joint.
Yeah, yeah. But it was a Ron Howard, Tom Hanks joint, which we've got a lot of those. He's just one of those that I feel this is very similar to the Denzel episode. We're like, yeah, you know Denzel's an awesome actor. I know I like Denzel. I know he's good. And then you look at his filmography and it's like, holy crap, I didn't realize I like that much Denzel. The Marky Mark episode. Mm-hmm. Like, holy crap, I like a lot of Marky Mark. Marky Mark is a legit actor. Ron Howard, like, I know he's a good director. But then you look at his filmography, it's like, holy crap, he is way better than I would give him credit for. Because, you know, I think of, like, EdTV, but he made A Beautiful Mind. Cinder, that didn't even get mentioned.
Yeah.
Frost Nixon was a good one. And he's got a little bit of everything. He did that stupid Vince Vaughn comedy, The Dilemma, like In the Heart of the Sea just a couple years ago. Like, he's got movies for everybody. And he's one of those directors, like Spielberg, that if you show everybody their filmography, they're going to be able to find at least a couple movies that they really like, no matter what their taste is.
Or who? Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, certain directors are more niche directors, so it might be hard if you don't like the genre or the style they work in. But Ron Howard's a guy, like, if you're just a human being breathing on the planet and aren't morally opposed to talkies, you're going to like at least probably a handful of Ron Howard movies. And if I give you the list, you're not really going to have to stretch.
But we talk about from 82. We're going on almost 40 years of Ron Howard being a legit director, like a really good top-notch director. But I still think people think of him as an actor first.
Absolutely.
And what does that say about your acting career? He doesn't really act much. You were Opie, and yep, you were Richie Cunningham, and then the voice on Arrested Development. I have such respect for Ron Howard because the dude is insanely talented, and it's ridiculous that I'm glad we did this episode because I already knew I liked Ron Howard, but now my respect for him is so much deeper. I like episodes like this, and I like when we do episodes like this where it's not necessarily an obvious one. And
yeah, I mean, it should be. You know, when you talk about, like, icons within film and television, especially if you're going to roll television in there as well, Ron Howard's producing TV shows. He's done a ton of that. Obviously, you mentioned acting. People that are our parents' age, you'd struggle to find two shows that were more iconic than Andy Griffith or Happy Days. But transition to not only being, oh, it's cute, he's a director. No, like, he's one of the best directors that we have working. So much so that he's handed the keys to the Millennium Falcon when things look like they're on the skids.
And early reviews are coming in, and it's people expected this to be a disaster. Doesn't seem to be.
To be honest, say what you want about Kathleen Kennedy, I think she's made the right decisions. But when Ron Howard is brought in to direct this movie, I think to myself, it's going to be okay. This is a guy that's captained the ship
before. Is it as exciting as a Lord Miller Star Wars movie? On paper, no. Like, I think the idea of somebody like Lord Miller doing a Star Wars movie on paper feels more exciting, but this is more solid.
And
like,
I read,
this is the safer bet, and I'm okay with that.
A good quote about that. Lord Miller had it in their minds they wanted to make a Guardians of the Galaxy Star Wars movie. And you know what? I love Guardians of the Galaxy. That would have been a lot of fun. Ron Howard set out to make a good Star Wars movie, and I like Star Wars. So am I disappointed I may never get to see a Lord Miller? Well, I will never get to see a Lord Miller Star Wars movie. Eh, maybe. Am I disappointed that I'm going to get to see a Ron Howard Star Wars movie? Absolutely not. I mean, when we first started talking about Disney's acquisition of Star Wars and, okay, who's going to direct the saga films, we had a short list of directors that we wanted to see. And in fairness to Ron Howard, I don't think he was on there at the time. He should have been.
Because he's one that you don't think about.
Right. But that list of people I'd really like to see direct a Star Wars movie is getting shorter and shorter. Spielberg's probably like the one guy.
Vaughn for me.
Matthew Vaughn would
or
be
even
great.
Duncan Jones, maybe.
Yes. But as far as like big time directors, you know, Spielberg's the guy that's been orbiting Star Wars for so long, consulting and just being general like buddies
like
with
Lucas. A Spielberg
Lucas.
Young Obi-Wan would be awesome. I feel like that's a good combination.
I would watch that. They've stopped short of admitting that that's the next movie that they're going to do. All hell, by the time this episode is up, maybe they will have admitted it. But yeah, I'm very excited to see a Ron Howard Star Wars movie. And I got to be honest, I'm more excited because we did this list.
Yeah. He's one of those that I don't think you think about as like, oh, one of the best directors working. But he is. Next week, we go to another great director. Not quite the...
Doesn't have the length of
not
the
filmography
resume
of Ron Howard. But next week, we're going to be talking about Karen Kusama's Invitation starring fake Tom Hardy because the new fake Tom Hardy movie comes out next
Fat
week.
H.
Upgrade, which... I'm excited for, so...
It's an upgrade over the real Tom Hardy movie this
Yeah,
time.
So I'm really excited about this episode. We're going to do the Invitation next week, which I am really excited for because I really, really love that movie. And we invite you all, if you have not seen The Invitation, please watch it.
It's probably on Netflix,
it's on,
right?
It is on Netflix. If you have not seen The Invitation, it's on Netflix. Watch it before you listen to us next week because we are going to have to spoil it to talk about it. And the less you know about it going into it, the better. It's such a fun experience of a movie. It's a great, great experience for a first-time viewer that doesn't know anything about it. So if you have not seen The Invitation, please watch it or skip next week's episode until after you watch it. But until next week.
Keep it up.